their grip on information, the grip of the legacy media on the narrative is slipping. And it is through podcasts like yours and people who do deep dives and do investigation into these things. More and more people become aware of it. One of the reasons people just aren't buying, for example, everything that happened during COVID. They're just not believing the federal government because the federal government is not worthy of their trust.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of The Corbett Report coming to you in September of 2025, specifically 1 week before the anniversary of the events of 9/11/2001. And today's guest that I'm going to be talking to, well, if you're a regular person, you may know him as Ron Johnson, a senator who was elected to the United States Senate for the first time in 2010. He might also know that he served as chairman of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs from 2015 to 2021, and that he remains a member of that committee. You might also know that he currently serves as a ranking member of the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations and is also a member of the Budget, Finance, and Aging Committees. But if you are one of those special, enlightened people who get all your information from the mainstream media, you might know Senator Ron Johnson from such headlines as: Ron Johnson has gone full 9/11 conspiracy nut. GOP senator to hold hearings on bonkers 9/11 conspiracy theory. Ron Johnson goes full 9/11 truther in deranged rant. And my personal favorite, GOP's Ron Johnson peddles fringe 9/11 conspiracy theories, reaches new low. So what has got the brave truth-telling truth-tellers of the mainstream media all in a tizzy? Let's find out, shall we? Senator Ron Johnson, thank you for joining me today on The Corbett Report.
Well, James, I had not seen or heard of those headlines, so thanks.
You are welcome. It is part of my duty to let people know the press that that is following them and the sort of things that are attendant upon treading into the minefield of 9/11, as I'm sure you're already aware from other sources. Today, obviously, I want to talk about the fact that you are going to be a keynote speaker at next week's conference called Turning the Tide, 9/11 Justice in 2025, that's going to be taking place in Washington, D.C. from, I believe, September 10th to 12th. Anyway, the details will be linked up in the show notes if people are interested in attending that event. But a United States senator talking about 9/11, a new investigation in 2025, what is going on? Let's start this conversation by talking about yourself, your own personal experience of 9/11, and your own impressions, your own thoughts of the events at that time when they took place.
Sure. Well, in 2001, I was running a manufacturing plant. We was producing plastic, and like most Americans that were live at that point in time, had access to a TV. All of a sudden, you hear a plane hit the World Trade Center. You think it's probably a small little plane, pilot, something happened. Then you saw another plane smash into it, and, I think my reaction was very common. This changes everything. The world just changed, and it did. And so, I had shared that same experience. None of us who were live and watching that day will never forget that moment. But at the same time, I think like the vast majority of Americans, people around the world, pretty well bought the narrative, just accepted what the government told us. And I think really where things started changing for me, obviously I became a U.S. senator, not to do investigations, not to investigate 9/11. Became U.S. senator because we're mortgaging our children's future. I knew Obamacare wouldn't work. It hasn't. And so those are the two main issues. I sprung up from the Tea Party. I still view myself more Tea Party than Republican, but you got to join one side, and I'm far more aligned with Republicans. But then, as you said, I became chairman of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee right at the time when the revelation of Hillary Clinton's email scandal broke. The Benghazi scandal. And it just so happens, the Homeland Security Committee used to be just called Governmental Affairs. It was the Senate Oversight Committee. We can provide oversight on virtually anything in government. It's our responsibility to do so. But in particular, we have legislative jurisdiction over federal records. And so the Hillary Clinton email scandal required oversight, but is also right within the jurisdiction of the committee. It was just something I had to look into. So we investigated that. That began my investigatory career as U.S. Senator. That opened my eyes to the lies, the corruption of federal agencies. Then, fast forward, and I'm trying to really condense this, COVID hit. Nobody in the center of the House were investigating things like or holding hearings on early treatment. Everything was all about the COVID injection, you know, a vaccine, Operation Warp Speed. And I was watching, you know, whether it's hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, all these things being, these treatments being suppressed, quite honestly, the pandemic being blown way out of proportion. This wasn't Ebola, it wasn't SARS-1, it wasn't MERS, you know, this wasn't a 40% fatality rate, it was going to be something like, you know, maybe a really, really bad flu season. So I was holding hearings on it, just trying to provide information to the public, further noticed, you know, further evidence of how the federal government and its agencies lie repeatedly to the American public. Then I met Bobby Kennedy. And I remember doing a podcast, I think it was in Nashville, with Bobby Kennedy. I walked into the green room and he's talking about visiting his father's apparent assassin, Sirhan Sirhan, in jail. And, you know, telling the story about his father's assassination, which, again, does not line up with the narrative of the government and mainstream media. And so at that point in time, Bobby turned me on to a book, JFK and the Unspeakables, The Devil's Chessboard, about our CIA. And again, your eyes just continue, your eyes keep opening wider and wider and wider, and you see the government covering things up. I just finished a book, Blowback, on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's just amazing, James, you know, how many people held in jails commit suicide. You know, key witnesses to key moments in our history. So after a while, these things just continue to pile up. And specifically on 9/11, as right now I'm chairman of the Permanent Subcommittee Investigations, as ranking member, our chairman then, Richard Blumenthal, he wanted to do an investigation of the PGA's negotiation with LIV Golf. I didn't think it was particularly appropriate that we would do that, but the result of that, he held a pretty high-profile hearing. The result of that is we had all the 9/11 families start approaching me in the hallways of, you know, our Senate office buildings, pleading with me to use this moment to get the FBI to turn over an unredacted version of their report on what Saudi Arabia knew about 9/11. That's what started me down this journey on 9/11. So in that hearing, kind of bushwhacked Senator Blumenthal, and I asked him to join me in requesting the FBI provide that unredacted report, which they never did, of course. But that then connected me to people who wanted to convey information to me. I've got a good friend, a contractor in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, Ben Ganther, Ganther Construction, knows a lot about construction, knows a lot about structural engineering, who quite honestly started sending me the best of James Corbett report. And connected me with Richard Gage. And so I started looking at documentaries, you know, like yours, calling out Bravo 7, Building 7, Graham McQueen's kind of final interview. And again, when you get the information, your eyes open up, you see these very legitimate questions being raised and no answers being provided whatsoever. In fact, that, you know, then when you just raise the issue, when you question it, you get those kind of headlines. Well, I'm just asking these very legitimate questions. Why can't we do that? Which of course just raises my suspicion level. So that's pretty well the, you know, you're the expert in this. I mean, the Richard Gage of the world, the structural engineers, the firefighters who know the history of, you know, these steel buildings not coming down because of basic fires. You need something else. You know, the first time, I'd never even heard of Building 7. I mean, there's 20 years later, I had never heard of Building 7. And all of a sudden you see the video and you go, sure looks like controlled demolition to me. And then you start watching the documentaries and you hear about the structural engineering professor up in Alaska doing a four-year study on that, completely refutes what NIST study. Hear about the 9/11 commission again. I mean, I can just go on and on. I'm not an expert on this. I've just heard all the questions and they sound completely legitimate to me. And so you ask yourself the question, so why can't even ask these questions? I think an interesting component of this is because people don't want to know the answer. I mean, it opens up, which I can completely understand from the position of the President of the United States, our relationship with foreign, I can certainly understand why, if the truth were ever known, we may want to just slam that Pandora's box closed. So that's kind of the position we're in right now. I think the questions are legitimate. They've been raised. People don't want the answers. A lot of people do, but a lot of people don't.
Well, I certainly people in certain positions of power probably do not want people questioning what really happened on that day, because there are a lot of uncomfortable answers. And one example of that that you just raised there in your own personal story, you talk about the Benghazi hearings, for example, that you were a part of. And as we know, of course, obviously, the investigation was very much into how did U.S. servicemen and other personnel end up dying there. But really, the real question was, what was that CIA annex doing there in Benghazi in the first place? And oh, as it turns out, they were running guns into Syria, running weapons into Syria so that the U.S. State Department could continue its destabilization operation in Syria with the support of Al-Qaeda, who, it turns out, were the good guys again back in the 2010s when they were fighting Bashar al-Assad. So I think that's, again, it's just another window into what I understand. We concentrate on the date of 9/11/2001 for obvious reasons, but that is just one part of a much, much bigger story that gets into some very uncomfortable questions about the U.S. government's complicity in acts of terrorism around the world. And I can understand why people are very reticent to get into those questions. So let's get into them.
It's just a story of lies. It's a story of lies and deception that really span decades. You know, I mean, it goes, yes. I mean, you talk about the FDR and Pearl Harbor, you know, but I mean, up to more modern times where I'm living, you know, the JFK assassination, Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, just go right down the list. What really happened there? I don't know whether we will ever know. I know, you know, President Trump promised to release all the files on JFK. Great. I mean, I never expected any kind of bombshells out of there, because I would expect that anything that was really incriminating has been long been destroyed. Just like a lot of witnesses just happily die, you know, or just accidentally die.
Yeah. Well, as you know, you point out, this is just part of a larger story. And in fact, as one of the 9/11 commissioners said when cornered at one point, 9/11 was a 20-year conspiracy. And oddly, no one in the mainstream media has followed up with him what he meant by that. But I have a feeling it probably does talk to that bigger picture of Al-Qaeda and U.S. government operations. So let's start talking about some of the actual information that we got and some of the investigations that have already happened, because I was pleased to inform, I was a bit nervous when I first went into that NBC News article about you calling for a new 9/11 investigation, but I was very relieved when they informed me that apparently all question of Building 7 and what happened to it have been debunked, and they literally link to their own news story from 2008 about the NIST report. So don't worry, guys, NIST has looked into it and found nothing at all unusual about Building 7's collapse. Of course, there was the 9/11 Commission appointed by President Bush. Originally, it was going to be headed by Henry Kissinger, but he had some conflicts of interest with people named Bin Laden, who may have been clients of Kissinger and Associates, so he stepped aside. And don't worry, Philip Zelikow really ran that commission from behind the scenes. And, of course, we have the Joint Congressional Investigation, which, by the way, large sections of were classified and held behind secrecy for decades. So nothing to see here, guys. It's all been debunked. Tell us about what you know about the investigations that have happened in the U.S. government already and why they are inadequate.
Well, again, you're the expert here. I've just been a receiver of information up to this point. I'm not here to reveal anything new that you don't know a whole lot more about than I do. I'm just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen here. I do know, for example, that Tucker Carlson is set to release a five-part series on 9/11 based on his investigation. What I do know is the government back in the 60s had far greater control over information than they have today. They had far greater control over information in 2000, 2010, even 2020. Their grip on information, the grip of the legacy media on the narrative is slipping. And it is through podcasts like yours and people who do deep dives and do investigation into these things. More and more people become aware of it. One of the reasons people just aren't buying, for example, everything that happened during COVID. They're just not believing the federal government because the federal government is not worthy of their trust, of being believed. And so that's really the state of affairs right now. It's a very sad state of affairs. You would like to have a society, you'd like to have institutions that people could rely on, that they had faith in. When you get to this level, when the general public simply has very little faith or no faith in its institutions, it's very dangerous for society. It's not a good sign. So, I would like to restore that trust, but the only way I know of restoring that trust is by revealing the truth, making government and government agencies more trustworthy, which they currently are not. You're seeing right now, I'm about ready to head into a hearing with RFK Jr. in Senate Finance. I mean, it'll be interesting to see the 16 ways on Sunday he will now be attacked for simply wanting to return and restore integrity to science and to the federal health agencies who have been captured by big pharma and big agriculture and big food. American people know that. There's a reason why the MAHA movement is so strong. Is I held an event with RFK Jr., Dr. Casey Means in September. It was called American Health and Nutrition, Second Opinion. And among all the excellent testimony, there was one witness, Dr. Chris Palmer, a psychiatrist who does a lot of work investigating the impact of nutrition on mental health. And his little snippet, I think, was probably the most noteworthy. He said, they don't want causes discovered of chronic illness, of autism. They don't want this discovered. I think the same can apply to 9/11. They don't want to know the answers. Okay? And like I say, when you consider the geopolitical ramifications of actually knowing the truth, again, I don't know what the truth is, but I could imagine, I've heard different theories, the geopolitical ramifications of the actual truth on 9/11 might be pretty devastating.
It might completely upend the world order as we know it. So again, I understand why powerful institutions might be uncomfortable with questions being asked along these lines. And unfortunately, I think people have lost their lives for less than asking questions about uncomfortable events like this. So I take it very seriously. Let's talk about that issue that you raise, quite rightly, the issue of trust, the fundamental issue of trust and the public's lack thereof in governmental institutions for obvious reasons. I mean, obviously, what just took place with regards to the COVID scamdemic being a very, very good example of why the public has completely lost trust in its institutions. And I imagine most of the people in my audience have a high degree of skepticism about the possibility of a new 9/11 investigation coming from the U.S. government. Don't worry, we investigated and found ourselves guilty of nothing. The cynicism of people has reached probably record highs at this point. So let's address that specifically. What if you were to be part of a new Senate investigation into 9/11, how would it be different than the ones that have been conducted before? Why would you be hopeful that there would be actual information forthcoming from such an investigation?
Well, because people like you who have dug into this thing now for 20, almost 25 years, you've dug up an awful lot of information. If given a platform, if given a forum for more Americans to see, as opposed to, I don't know what your following is on social media. But again, they do a pretty good job of suppressing this kind of information. But if you actually given a public forum and quite honestly, the legitimacy of a U.S. Senate hearing, more people would have their eyes open. So I think that would be groundbreaking.
Well, you said it yourself. It was 20 years after the events before you saw Building 7 and what happened to it. And that is shocking. I mean, you would think a U.S. senator, of course they know about Building. No, maybe they do not. And what about the average person on the street? Probably has no idea what Building 7 even is, let alone why they should be interested in it. So yes, getting this information in front of a wider audience, shall we say, might be important, at the very least, to get public perception, public information at a higher level than what we're used to, unfortunately, from the mainstream media. So let's talk about the process. I mean, what is it that you're proposing exactly? A Senate Oversight Committee investigation or some other form of investigation?
Right now, I'm not proposing anything. I haven't scheduled a hearing. I'm somewhat open for business. I had a very interesting chance encounter with a gentleman that was leaving the Hart Building as I'm walking in, gave me his name, said that he was a government employee that volunteered to help clean up 9/11. He was assigned to go out some place might have been in New Jersey. You probably know about this site where they were took all the steel, which again is just another bizarre thing. You know, I understand wanting to clean it up, but then as the firefighters point out, you know, broke every rule or law or regulation as relates to firefighting investigations and got rid of all the evidence. But what this fellow was assigned to do is sift through the remains or the debris of, I believe, Building 7 and pick out anything that looked like an electronic device. He said he left his name in my front office. They have no record of it. So I don't know. I'd like this guy to recontact me, but maybe you know other people who have were on the same crew where they do, but that's just sort of suspicious right there. I mean, they're wholesale moving this stuff out, selling it out to China, get rid of it, but yet they're separating out all the electronic components. Again, it's just a bit of evidence, something that, you know, a legitimate, what was all that about? You know, first of all, do we know who ordered the removal of all that debris? Do we know who ordered it then sent over to China and destroyed? I mean, who made those decisions? I mean, have we ever gotten answers on that? I'm asking you. I mean, again, those are just, you know, Richard Gage put together a very good, about a 50 question list of the major questions, right? That list of questions raises questions in my mind. So again, the way I would structure a hearing literally just be ask the questions. What are the outstanding questions that probably ought to be answered? Try and organize it in a manner that is revealing, okay, that is convincing.
Just to not leave that information hanging, I would suggest people check out my 9/11 Suspects series on, for example, Rudy Giuliani, to talk about the destruction and removal, the illegal removal of the debris. Also, in my 9/11 Trillions documentary, I talk about Convar, the German firm that was hired to go through the recovered hard drives from the WTC, and what did not come out of that investigation is probably worth people's time and attention. But there's, as you say, there's a million pieces of information like that that deserve following up in a way that will have actual teeth to it. Ultimately, I think it would be great if we could get some actual on-the-record testimony from people under oath. That would be at least a step in the right direction. I'm sure you're aware that former Congressman Curtis Weldon has been calling for the impaneling of a new 9/11 commission. Would you, a presidential commission of inquiry, would you be supportive of such an initiative?
I would. That would take the president to do that. You know, right now, I think this president's got a lot of irons in the fire, so I'm not sure, you know, how much time and, quite honestly, political capital he wants to spend doing that. I do know the firefighters, if that commission were to be appointed, want no politicals involved, and I don't disagree with that. I mean, you want structural engineers. You want expert, you know, people that are, they're experts in the different issues here. You know, again, the same kind of folks are putting together these documentaries, those people you want on the commission, you know, totally divorced outside of government. You know, part of the problem here, you go back to George Washington, who warned us in his farewell speech about foreign entanglements. We haven't heeded his warning very well. When you are entangled in all these foreign operations, I mean, you can justify, well, you do need to keep some secrets inside government for national security, right? Well, if you didn't have so many frickin' foreign entanglements, you wouldn't have to keep so many frickin' secrets, right? So I think there's a growing recognition in America that maybe we're a little too far flung. Maybe we put our nose in too many people's business. Maybe we ought to concentrate on our own. And if we did that, there's no justification in my mind for example, CDC and the FDA withholding all the information on vaccine injuries and what they knew. And, you know, there just isn't. I mean, here we are 5 years after that, four or five years after the pandemic. And, you know, I'm still, you know, Bobby Kennedy has returned over something like 8.5 million pages initially now. So that's pretty radical transparency, but that's pretty overwhelming as well. But it took a new administration and somebody like Bobby Kennedy to break that logjam of information being held by CDC and FDA. Now, you know, we don't know how much of it's already been destroyed. When you get information from government, you always have to take it with a grain of salt, because you just realize that they've gotten very good at knowing how not to be FOIA'd. You know, we uncovered that needle in the haystack. This Dr. Morins, who basically was bragging about how, hey, I got this gal that will tell you how to avoid FOIA. You know, don't communicate with me on my government server. Go through Gmail. We're seeing evidence of that as well. Let's talk about this over the phone, not through email. So that means they're already quite good at understanding that FOIA laws can trip them up. So, you know, they're avoiding FOIA like a plague. So it's hard to get the truth, the entire truth, all the documents out of the federal government, because they either destroy them or they don't create them.
You know, that's a great example. And for people who want to know more about that, the search term to use is FOIA lady. I have the FOIA lady who lets me know how to avoid that information. Yeah.
And we got that email, not from the government. We got that email from a university that had been on the distribution list of that email. So the government never turned it over, but, you know, university did. And again, my staff going through like 115,000 pages of documents pulled that needle out of that haystack.
Absolutely incredible. And think of how many more needles are in all of the haystacks that are out there. So I think, again, who knows what you're going to find when you start investigating. You know, you've raised the COVID issue, because I know you have been dogged on that issue over the past few years. For people that don't know, tell us about your efforts in trying to achieve justice for the people who have been vaccine harmed over the past few years.
Yeah, I mean, that's a real tragedy. It's probably the main reason I ran for a third term. I'd rather be home. But I was holding hearings as chairman of Homeland Security on early treatments. And of course, the doctors that testified had their careers destroyed. People like Dr. McCulloch and Pierre Corey and others. Again, makes no sense whatsoever. I mean, I don't know why we spend more time investigating treatment for disease as opposed, again, because vaccines, there's no liability to them. They're multi-billion dollar businesses, and that's the way we've set the thing up. So I'm holding hearings on early treatment. People are getting injured. I fortunately was connected very early on with Michael Yeadon. He was a 30-year employee of Pfizer, ended up senior vice president of research. His background's in toxicology. He went through all the reasons that he was beside himself when he found out what his colleagues were doing with that injection. So, Ron, there's a long list of ingredients we don't put in injectables because they're toxic to the body. When I found out my colleagues were actually going to produce something that was going to turn the body's cells into a manufacturer of something that was toxic to it, I couldn't believe it. He literally is beside himself. That conversation right there convinced me there's no way I was ever going to take that experimental injection. And as a result, I was actually watching the safety surveillance systems that FDA and CDC were touting before they got their emergency use authorization, to then, once the data started coming in and they had to hire more people because the adverse event reports were so overwhelming, then they started denigrating their own VAERS system. So all of that, you know, you can't rely on that. I mean, false reports and it doesn't prove causation, or, blah, 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 you know. So, but I was watching it. And so I raised the issue, I think, with Francis Collins about what was happening on VAERS, the thousands of deaths. At that time, 46% of those deaths, there were a couple thousand, were occurring on the day of injection or within 1 or 2 days. This is in April 2021. And Francis Collins, in a meeting with some other Republican senators, they're all patting themselves in the back that they got the test kits right. So I'm the skunk in the room. So, you know, Dr. Kiles, are you paying attention to what your veterans are saying? And he said, Senator, we've determined 6 people have died from the J&J injection. But other than that, you know, Senator, people die. That's how callous it was. So I'd raise that issue. I kept publishing my veterans chart. When I'd go on media, those media figures would sometimes be deplatformed by Facebook. Just because I'm showing the actual data from, I'm not making it up, I'm showing the actual data, the growing number of deaths being reported worldwide, you know, what percent are occurring on day 0, 1, or 2. Finally got contacted by a former Green Bay Packer, Ken Rutgers, a lineman, whose wife was vaccine injured. And he's, can you help us? And I said, well, I can provide you a forum. I can give you a platform. I guess that's what I'm kind of offering to people who are questioning about 9/11. I can offer a platform. Again, understand what you're subjecting yourself to. And of course, we did this in June of 2021 in Milwaukee. We had Brian Dressen there. We had Maggie DeGarry. We had you know people with just heartbreaking stories. And of course, the media, we had about a dozen Wisconsin news media cameras there. You would think they would show some level of sympathy with these victims. Now, the first question out of Ken Rutgers was, oh, are you just trying to make money off a lawsuit here? So that, you know, again, kind of a long story, but that's how I got involved in advocating for the vaccine injured, because nobody else would, or quite honestly, nobody else is. Very few people. Okay, you've got Children's Health Defense. I mean, those people who've been, you know, the Bobby Kennedy kind of kept at arm's length as he's doing his environmental talks, but finally a mom found out where he lived, came up with a stack of research. So I'm not leaving until you to look at this. And to Bobby Kennedy's credit, he read the research on childhood vaccine injuries, and he wouldn't turn his back on him. Okay? And that's the secret here, James. Once people's eyes are opened, it's pretty darn difficult to close them. Now, you can force them closed. I mean, you can turn your back, but it's pretty hard. And that's certainly what we're finding with, for example, the mRNA, which, by the way, is not true mRNA. It's modified, so it doesn't degrade in the body. So now it's circulating the body. They have no idea where, how long it's going to exist, okay? It's out of control. But I lost my train of thought.
Well, let me just comment on that, because you make a number of important points, one of which, let me just commend you for avoiding that term vaccine and using the correct experimental mRNA injection terminology, because I think we do have to speak about this. And you're exactly right. It's modified RNA. That's the mod in Moderna, is it not? So I think a lot of people are not, again, like Building 7 or these types of issues, are not informed of the fundamental bedrock questions in this. And we have been exhorted to trust the science, which is, of course, why faith in science and institutions surrounding that has plummeted over the past few years, because people were lied to. Having said that, as I say, the cynicism and skepticism is rising, and I can certainly attest to that from even my own audience. Many people very skeptical of, say, Bobby Kennedy. If he knows about the harm that is being caused by these injections, why did he not on day one just outlaw all of the experimental mRNA injection technology until it can be proven safe and effective? What do you say to that? What, for people who do not know the political process and how political capital is actually accrued and spent, how do you address that kind of cynicism?
Well, I understand he's taking over an agency that has tens of thousands of people. Most of them are completely opposed to what he's trying to do. Some of them are complicit and culpable in this, in line to the American public, covering up those lies. You know, saying it was going to stay in your arm when they knew it was going to biodistribute all over the body. So he's up against powerful forces. I mean, I think they are, and you've heard reports, you've seen things, they're literally spending millions to just destroy him, okay? And they're ramping it up. And, you see the we'll call it a kerfuffle at the CDC and all these people resigning and stuff, and, good riddance, okay? I think something like 1,000 CDC employees have signed a letter to, asking him to be fired. Well, good. You just identified yourself. They ought to lose their job as well. But we are up against powerful forces. Now, I will say on the mRNA, science has been corrupted. I think that's obvious. When you pay for science, you get the result you want. And so you got pharmaceutical companies paying for science. They do their own studies. They've captured the agencies. My problem with this is you go down so many different rabbit holes here. But the bottom line is you're up against powerful forces. He's trying to thread a needle. I'm also the author of Right to Try, So I can't tell you definitively, did the mRNA, did it help save lives? I think a lot of, you know, even skeptics will at least admit, well, it did boost antibodies. And for the vulnerable, you might have had a higher antibody level. And, you know, particularly for the elderly or people with comorbidities, it might have reduced the severity of the illness, might save lives. I mean, that's entirely possible. I can't, you know, there's no good study on that, but that's entirely possible. So, you know, this is a platform. I think the mRNA platform, particularly for things like cancer, is very promising. Okay, we're trying to advance science here. Should have been used in a mass vaccination campaign in the midst of pandemic? I would argue absolutely not. People like Gert von den Bosch would certainly back me up on that. I'm just basically quoting him. So again, the world is not black and white. You know, there can be real benefits to mRNA therapy. It's gene therapy, but let's not lie about it. Let's give people informed consent. And that's basically what's happened. I think that's the hopeful sign here. When you have, I think Rasmussen report said something like a quarter of the American public believe they know of somebody who died from the injection. You know, for more than 50% knew somebody who was seriously injured by the injection. You can't hide that. This, you know, again, this was administered to you know, billions of people. People saw it. They saw it with their own eyes. They're not denying it. So that's hard to cover up. You know, people like you with 9/11, you just need larger platforms. More people need to understand the legitimate questions that simply have not been answered.
Excellent. Well, we will agree to disagree on the potential utility for mRNA injections. I think they are a travesty in every way, and we've been lied to top to bottom about them. But perhaps that is getting a bit off of the main topic of today. Let's get back to the fundamental bedrock here. Turning the tide, 9/11 justice in 2025. You are going to be appearing there along with, as I mentioned, former Congressman Kurt Weldon, former Congressman Dennis Kucinich, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer, CIA whistleblower John Kiriakou, and a host of researchers who have spent decades looking into these questions. Tell us about this event and what you're going to be speaking about.
I'll probably leave the audience as unsatisfied as I'm leaving you. Again, I'm not an expert on this. And I know I ventured into the whole COVID realm here and the injection realm, but it's the same issue. It's the exact same issue. It is government not being honest with the American public, even though we pay for government, we pay for these studies, we pay their salaries, but they're insulated from us. And they believe they're a power unto themselves. You know, whether it's in the CIA, the FBI, Department of Justice, you know, NIH, FDA, CDC, it's the same problem, it's the same issue. And I would argue the root cause here literally is the size, scope, cost of government and its influence over our lives. It's way too big. It's way too big. Back in 1930, the federal government consumed about 3.5% of our GDP. Back then, state and local governments were 9.1%. That was the foundational premise of this nation, that most government, close to the government, governed where it's more effective, more efficient, more accountable, right? We've turned that on its head. And under Obama, government reached 24.4% after the Great Recession. Now, last year, we're at 23.9% because, as Rahm Emanuel said, boy, never let a good crisis go to waste, and they didn't. We went from $4.4 trillion in spending in 2019, prior to the pandemic, to 6.5, and we never looked back. This year, we're going to spend over $7 trillion. And as much as I've been screaming about we have to return to a reasonable pre-pandemic level, just like we did after World War II, went from 11.7% of spending up to 41, we weren't crazy enough to stay at 41%. We've been crazy enough to stay at 23.4%. Okay, but it's government that is the problem. Yeah, you know, our founders are geniuses. They realized we're not angels. We're men and women. We're flawed. If we don't want to live in chaos and anarchy, we need some form of government. But it needed to be limited, do only the things that they were going to enumerate in our Constitution. We've gone way beyond that. And I would argue it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked. We haven't listened to Washington in terms of staying out of foreign entanglements. We've grown government. Government causes or exacerbates more problems than it solves. So it's the same issue across the board. Government is too big. What is 9/11 about? I mean, is it our foreign entanglements? I mean, What is it? You know, if we would have been focused on America, if we had much limited government, if we paid attention to George Washington, would 9/11 even happened? No matter what happened, would have it happened? I don't know. But we need a complete rethinking in the American mind. Stop being dependent on the federal government. Shrink its size, its scope, its cost. That's the solution. But I mean, there are very few of us who think that.
Well, you can count me among them that I think, yes, we should reduce our dependency on government and increase our independence in every way, shape, and form. So I agree with that. Let's end it on that note of concord. And if I may be so bold as to give you some advice, Senator, I would say continue ignoring the headline writers because they matter not. Continue doing what you're doing and continue asking questions. I think people are appreciative of that. And I hope people will support people who are out there putting their careers and their reputations on the line to ask the uncomfortable questions, even if the answers are not what everyone wants to hear. Senator Johnson, thank you very much for your time. Let's direct people once again to the Turning the Tide 9/11 Justice in 2025 conference, where you'll be speaking next week. The link will be in the show notes. But on that note, thank you very much for your time today.
Well, thanks for everything you've done as well. Take care.